The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, I'm often curious about the relationship between understanding and love, wisdom, compassion. And is love the nature of awareness? Some traditions say something like that. Or is love kind of follow in the wake of letting go, the letting go that allows awareness to hold all of us? And it's always been kind of curious that some, you know, folks have done lots of awareness practices and still behave unlovingly. And that's been a little bit of a puzzle for me. And so I think they do converge. Awareness and love, wisdom, love. But for that convergence to happen, we have to have an affectively charged experience of the three characteristics. Dukkha, Nicca, Anatta. That's what generates love, is an affectively charged experience of the three characteristics. So sometimes say that understanding involves becoming a kind of grown-up about our existential situation, a grown-up about our nervous system, a grown-up about pleasure and change and, you know, who we think we are. And being a grown-up about that, love really becomes the only tenable response to that understanding. And so mindfulness, this training and awareness, allows ordinary experience to become wisdom. The raw materials are right here. It's not some fancy experience. The raw materials are right here, and it's mindfulness that allows ordinariness to become wisdom, understanding. And in that process of generating that understanding, something like care, nonviolence, maybe we say love, is a kind of byproduct of that. So insight, you know, understanding, wisdom in insight meditation is largely about the three characteristics. So Bhante Gunaratana. There comes a point in insight meditation when the three characteristics of existence, unsatisfactoriness, impermanence, selflessness, come rushing home with concept searing force. You vividly experience the impermanence of life, the suffering nature of human existence, and the truth of no self. You experience these things so graphically that you suddenly awake the utter futility of craving, grasping, resistance. In the clarity and purity of this profound moment, our consciousness is transformed. All that's left is an infinity of interrelated, non-personal phenomena, which are conditioned and ever-changing. Craving is extinguished and a great burden is lifted. There remains only an effortless flow. In a sense, all of our grasping is bound up with a kind of immature relationship with the three characteristics. But the process of spiritual maturation is not a straight line. It's complex. We do not go from resistance to understanding in some kind of simple linear way. And often the Dharma must a little bit break our heart before we feel its freedom. And so before they become liberating, we grieve dukkha, anicca, anatta. We get and we get and we get. And it doesn't create a sense of completeness. It doesn't eradicate the first noble truth. We see change and we fantasize about building some fortress to keep anicca outside as tender, you know. We try to build a home in identity, but it never supports our feet. And so dukkha, anicca, anatta can harden or soften our heart. As practitioners, dukkha is meant to soften our heart, meant to make us more sensitive to love, less, hatred is less tenable. And if we really meet dukkha in an undefended way, recognize the helplessness of it, we deeply want to help. Amidst that kind of that cauldron of the encounter of the helplessness of like, oh, okay, dukkha is not governed. I did not write the rule. I do not control it. And we encounter that. Sometimes I say helplessness is a kind of synonym for suffering. And we deeply want help, want to help. We cannot help but become sensitive to the burden. And so we come to know all experience as having the same nature. It all becomes Dharma, you know, all becomes Dharma, all each moment becomes a kind of bow to the truth of things. And that it is not easy being human, this mobilizes a lot of care, a lot of love. Feeling our way through having a kind of affectively charged experience of anicca impermanence likewise generates love. I got into practice because I knew everything was changing, would change, and I knew my heart was totally unprepared for that. And until things change, it's hard to see how deeply we've been assuming permanence. Assume might not be quite the right word, might be something like reiterating, predicting from the past into the future, moment by moment. That's why we, you know, sometimes chant the five remembrances of, you know, of change, you know, to remind us. To be mindful is to be mindful of change. There's no mindfulness of stasis. But the fact that change, even when we kind of know, the fact that change is so startling underscores the necessity of love. That it takes the heart a long time to catch up with the Nietzsche. It's tender. And there are so few, consolations for changing this, consolations for grief. But one's love becoming bigger is a genuine consolation. Softened by dukkha, softened by anicca, and by anatta, the emptiness of self, to be freed of the habit of personalizing samsara, this realm of personalizing it, to see the innocence of conditionality, to be freed of the territoriality of self. We start to notice how much of our afflictive emotion involves, some measure of self-view. Self-view, is very fertile ground for rage and envy and defensiveness, clinging to view and shame. And it's said that the kind of intrinsic reflex of the self is to cling, or we maybe more precisely say the self is done by clinging. And so naturally that the clinging propagates, And then we start to let go as we grieve the homelessness of ego. We're reborn into a realm, something like love, kind of deep appreciation of everything that's skillful in us, and a deep forgiveness for our neurosis, a kind of playfulness with all the quirky foibles and compulsivity and the whole mess of it, playful. And as we come to understand this deeper understanding, there's a sense of, as well, at least as we align our sila, our ethical conduct, with our kind of deepest values, a sense that we can't be found out. There's nothing to find out about, me. And not even so embarrassed by our unconsciousness. That's not self, too. We become unintimidated by the goodness of others, unpossessive about the many things that we might envy. And then not the. Is the kind of dissolution, the sense of ownership. And that lyric, it's from like 60 years ago or something. When you ain't got nothing, you got nothing to lose. That sounds bad, but the wisdom of non-ownership, ain't got nothing. Nothing to lose. A lot easier to love when one's the spell of ownership's been broken. The attention's not pooled within the kind of, the circle care expands dramatically. The center is empty, but the heart is full. And so, understanding, love, reinforce each other, some deep connection. And invitation would be to explore that for yourself. Okay, thank you for your attention.